From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Monday, October 25th.
Fundamentally, we need to move away from debt-financed education. It does prevent a lot of folks from getting an education. And then the folks who do try to get an education, it makes the stakes too high if they're not successful.
That was Persis Yu, staff attorney at the National Consumer Law Center and director of the center's Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. We were talking about the student debt crisis in the U.S. and what we can do about it. We'll dig into that a little later on. But first, your morning headlines. America's top infectious disease expert says he is optimistic the country's 28 million children could begin to receive the COVID vaccine by November. Dr. Anthony Fauci expressed optimism that children ages 5 to 11 will be eligible soon while speaking on ABC.
If you look at the data that's been made public and announced by the company, the data look good as to the efficacy and the safety.
And that means they could be fully vaccinated by the holidays. The FDA's Independent Vaccine Advisory Board will meet Tuesday to formally discuss the Pfizer vaccine approval. According to Pfizer, children who participated in the vaccine's clinical trial were given one-third of an adult dose and received two shots 3 weeks apart. The FDA says during the trial, there were no cases of myocarditis or inflammation of the heart muscle. That's a rare complication among some young men who received the vaccine, stalling the vaccine's approval process for children. Next to Washington, D.C., where Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi expects a vote on the social spending bill to happen this week. This comes after President Joe Biden met with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin on Sunday at his home in Delaware. Manchin remains a holdout, as is Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema. The White House has come down from their original $3.5 trillion price tag to $2 trillion. That's meant a cut to climate provisions and the child tax credit. The White House is also looking to push Manchin on several environmental measures after he opposed a plan that would reward companies for investing in renewable energy while penalizing those who don't. The White House plans to put forward a social spending bill and an infrastructure bill in the coming week. We end in New Mexico, where actor Alec Baldwin was seen consoling the husband of cinematographer Helena Hutchins over the weekend. Hutchins died after Baldwin pulled the trigger on a gun that he was told was unloaded while filming a scene in the upcoming movie Rust. Baldwin has been fully cooperating with the police over the onset incident. This as more details are emerging about what led to the deadly incident. Just hours earlier, several camera operators held a walkout over concerns of the film set's safety. According to two sources from celebrity website TMZ, the gun handed to Baldwin was used by crew members for target practice offset, using real bullets. And more than 2 weeks before, Baldwin's stunt double accidentally fired off two rounds of real ammunition after being told that the gun was empty. And now to our interview. President Joe Biden campaigned on the promise to forgive federal student loans. At the start of the pandemic, President Trump put a freeze on student loan payments, which was then extended by Biden. Now that freeze will be expiring in late January unless Biden extends it again. How did the student debt crisis in the U.S. get so bad? And what can we do about it? To break it all down, I'm joined by Persis Yu, director of the National Consumer Law Center's Student Loan Borrower Assistance Program. Persis, welcome.
Very glad to be here.
So when you look at it, there is $1.6 trillion in combined student loan debt. For those who are in debt who have student loans, we're talking about an average anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000. How did we get in this position?
It has a lot to do with the policy choices that we've made on how to finance higher education. So over time, we have moved further and further into financing higher education through debt. And so that has disproportionately meant that people and low-income people and people of color are taking on more debt in order to get an education. Student loan debt is a huge problem for a huge portion of our adult population right now. And it impacts student loan borrowers from folks who are in their early 20s to folks up in their 80s and 90s.
So we've come to this place where student loan forgiveness, it really is a national and a political issue. Did that happen because the problem is just way too big now to ignore?
The federal student loan system has been in a crisis for a while, but it has reached extraordinary proportions. We have roughly 45 million people trapped in student loan debt. We have programs that are designed to help folks make their loans affordable. But unfortunately, due to decades of failures in administrations and servicing failures, we have folks that have been trapped in student loan debt for a very long time. The programs that are designed to help these borrowers repay their loans aren't functioning. We see that recently in the crisis with public service loan forgiveness. A lot of folks thought that they were promised cancellation after 10 years of performing public service, and it never panned out. That is probably the most visible problem, but we've had that problem over and over and over again. We have income dream payment plans that are supposed to provide affordable pathways out of debt. And unfortunately, out of the 4.4 million borrowers who've been in repayment for more than 2 decades, only 32 borrowers have ever received cancellation under that program. So the programs that we have, they're just not working, and they're not working for borrowers. When you combine this with the racial disparities, this becomes a bigger problem, right? So we know that Black students in particular have to take on more debt in order to go to school. We know that women have to take on more debt in order to go to school. And because we see the cost of college also continuing to rise, we just have a huge crisis with 45 million people owing, you know, $1.6, $1.7 trillion in total.
What has President Biden promised regarding loan forgiveness, and what has he delivered on?
On the campaign trail, we saw President Biden promise to cancel, student loan borrowers' debt. He made that promise over and over again. He has canceled some debt for some borrowers. For example, in the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, we've seen recently a promise by the Biden administration to look back and actually do an analysis to see who should have received cancellation under this program, who has been in public service for 10 years and should be getting loan forgiveness. We've seen other types of cancellation happen as well. So for borrowers with disabilities, the Biden administration has automatically canceled the loans or is planning on automatically canceling the loans for several hundred thousand borrowers who have been identified through Social Security records as qualifying. Similarly, with schools that have defrauded borrowers, we've seen some action in those places. Unfortunately, there's still a lot more to do, even in any of those programs. Social Security records don't identify all disabled borrowers. We have many more examples of schools that have defrauded students. All that together is still just a tiny fraction of the student loan portfolio. We have a bigger problem where folks just can't afford their student loans, regardless of how they got to them. And so what we haven't seen is the widespread cancellation that Biden promised.
And you've got the progressive wing of the Democratic Party also pushing. What is it that they want to see happen when it comes to student debt?
There are proposals asking President Biden to cancel up to $50,000 of student loans for all federal student loan borrowers, and to do it administratively, to not wait for Congress. President Biden has the authority with a stroke of a pen to just sign away that debt. So that's what folks are looking for. And there's a lot of reasons why folks are calling for $50,000 of debt cancellation. It would do a lot of good. It would do a lot of good to help bridge the racial wealth gap. You know, Black borrowers, Black and Latino borrowers, Black and Latino women borrowers in particular, have to take on much more debt in order to pay for school. We need to remedy these problems. Student loans are supposed to be a tool of access, and unfortunately, they're holding a lot of families back. A lot of the borrowers that we work with are in default on their student loans, and that has a lot of consequences for folks. It means that they lose their wages. It means that if they're on Social Security disability, they can have a portion of those benefits taken. So we're hoping for broad action from the Biden administration.
On the other side of this, who benefits from having these students continue to pay their loans?
There's a lot of big companies that benefit from these borrowers continuing to pay their loans. Certainly the servicing industry makes billions of dollars every year. A lot of schools have made a lot of money off of student loan debt. But to be perfectly honest, a lot of folks are never actually going to repay these loans. They're not affordable for many people. And so in some ways, we talk about what would cancellation cost the government. And I don't think it's as much as people think that it would be, because just because we're canceling $1 of student loan debt is not a dollar that we would necessarily get and recover. So I think when we look at kind of the benefits of what we would get from student debt cancellation, they certainly outweigh the costs.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Persis Yu, director of the National Consumer Law Center's Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. You're listening to the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. I'm joined by Persis Yu, director of the National Consumer Law Center's Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. So President Trump and Biden have both overseen a freeze in student loan payments. It's slated to expire in late January unless Biden extends it. Do you think that President Biden will extend this?
The payment suspension was put in place because of the pandemic. And in many places, we still haven't recovered even just from the pandemic itself. So I think that's a really outstanding question about whether or not people are ready from that perspective. But from a system-wide perspective, I think there's a lot of questions. We have a number of major federal loan servicers have actually just exited the federal loan program. So what we're going to see in the coming months is that millions of borrowers are going to have their loans transferred from one company to another. And this is all happening simultaneously while we're trying to restart repayment. Restarting repayment after nearly 2 years on a pause is unprecedented. We've never tried to do a reboot of the student loan system like this. So I think that there's a lot of outstanding questions about whether or not our system really can handle restarting right now with everything that's going on, combined with the fact that there is still a pandemic going on. While there has been some economic recovery, it's been very uneven. And so the folks who have always been struggling the hardest with student loans are probably struggling the most right now and least prepared to resume repayment on their student loans.
You mentioned this program that the Department of Education announced. It'll be offering a limited waiver so that borrowers can make their payments count towards public service loan forgiveness, regardless of the terms of their loan. Who can benefit from this program, and how do you think that will increase the number of people who can actually have their loans forgiven?
This program, this waiver, I think is going to be a huge deal for a lot of folks. The Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program has had a really atrocious denial rate. Around 98% of borrowers who have applied for cancellation under the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program have been denied. And these are folks who've been in public service for 10 or more years often. And they have been working under the assumption that if they worked in public service and they had federal loans, they would have it canceled. And unfortunately, the program has proven to be much more complicated than many people realized. So a lot of folks had the wrong kind of loans. A lot of folks had the Federal Family Education Loan Program loans, FFEL loans, as we call them. And so those are loans that were made by private lenders, but were federally backed. And before 2010, a lot of the loans were made through that program, but they were excluded from the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. And that's caused a lot of confusion because most people just frankly don't know what kind of loan they have. The next thing that was complicated is that you had to be in the right kind of repayment plan. There are about a dozen repayment plans out there, and servicers have not historically been great at explaining the options to borrowers. So we're going to see a lot of folks who have been denied, and a lot of people have been who've been identified already and have received notice that they're going to receive total cancellation now.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Persis Yu, director of the National Consumer Law Center's Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. You're listening to the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. I'm joined by Persis Yu, director of the National Consumer Law Center's Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. You have your day job an interesting role. You're under the Education Department. You're part of the rules-making committee, writing the rules on student loans. What can you tell us about that? Is there any significant changes coming? And what could be changed that could be make a big difference for people who are seeking higher education but can't afford it?
The action at the Department of Education through this rulemaking process is very important going forward. This rulemaking committee is looking at a lot of really big topics. So we're looking at the cancellation programs such as disability discharges, borrower defense to repayment when a school has defrauded the students, a number of other school-related cancellation programs like closed school discharges. But also, importantly, we're looking at income to repayment plans. We're looking at the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. So we know that we've had a lot of problems in the past administering these programs, and also a lot of problems just because some of the design features just weren't working. Income dream payment has not wound up being affordable for everybody. So this is an opportunity to look forward. I still think we need to look backwards and do widespread cancellation for folks who have been struggling through repayment for decades, but we need to also look forward and make reforms to the programs to make sure that they actually can function and work right and are designed well to benefit borrowers.
For so many people, they can't afford college. It's a decision of whether or not they can do it. What could be a game changer in college affordability that you think can make a difference?
I think the bottom line is that we need to find a way to finance education through some means other than debt, right? I mean, I think the most obvious solution is looking at increasing Pell Grants. But fundamentally, we need to move away from debt-financed education. It does prevent a lot of folks from getting an education. And then the folks who do try to get an education, it makes the stakes too high if they're not successful. One of the big problems that we have in the education system and the student loan system in particular is with folks who don't complete their degrees. And so they have all this debt that they've accumulated, but they don't have the degree that will help them repay that debt. And it's a large portion. It's been estimated about 40% of student loan borrowers have never completed their degree. That's a really large population. And a lot of those folks are in default. Those are the folks who are falling through the cracks. So we need Congress and states to step up and make sure that college is actually affordable for their students.
So on that topic of making college affordable, if you could advise the Biden administration to make some transformative change, what would that be?
We need to have debt-free college, period. We need to also look backwards. I think the amount of student loan debt that folks already have is still preventing other folks. We have parents who can't afford to send their kids to college because they're still paying on their own student loan debt. So we need to look backwards and we need to look forwards. We need to address the student loan crisis as it exists, cull down that 45 million student loan borrower population, get rid of bad debt on the books, and then look forward. You know, I think proposals to improve access to community colleges are critical. We need to look beyond that as well and make sure that, you know, folks are able to access the education that they need at an affordable way without accumulating crushing student loan debt.
We know Dr. Biden has been a long champion of community colleges and making it affordable. But ultimately, Persis, before you go, do you think college is still worth the debt?
Education is critically important for a functioning society. I wish we lived in a society that viewed higher education as a right, as something that, like we do with K-12 education, you need to have a college degree really to meaningfully participate in society. So I think what we need to do is we need to figure out how we can lower the stakes and let folks get an education and get both the training and build the knowledge base that we need for a functioning society.
Persis Yu, Director and Staff Attorney at the National Consumer Law Center. Persis, thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
And now let's look ahead at what's happening today. President Joe Biden travels to Newark, New Jersey to push for his bipartisan infrastructure bill and his social spending bill, all part of his Build Back Better agenda. The White House wants a vote this week on both bills before the president heads to the Global Climate Summit in Glasgow. It's a big week for Facebook. News organizations are expected to release more Facebook papers or internal documents from the company given by former employees. Whistleblower Frances Haugen will be speaking at the UK Parliament about what she experienced and saw while working for the social media giant. Facebook is also expected to announce the new company name this week in a rebranding effort. They're hoping they'll be known for more than just social media. Rapper Cardi B is headed to trial today. Cardi entered a plea of not guilty to 12 counts of felony attempted assault and a charge for reckless endangerment. She's accused of attacking two bartenders in 2019 when the rapper and two friends threw glass bottles and drinks at them during a fight. The attack was allegedly coordinated on social media and due to one of the bartenders having an affair with Cardi's rapper husband, Offset. If convicted, Cardi could spend up to 4 years in prison. Have a great Monday, everyone. I'll see you back tomorrow. Thank you. This is the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. Our thanks to Persis Yu, staff attorney at the National Consumer Law Center and director of the center's Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project, for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to the Recount Daily Pod and do leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.